Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Front Lines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. You know, the FBI raid on Trump's home was clearly politically based. A simple example. The FBI agent seized three of Trump's passports. Passports are very easy to recognize and are nothing but a form of identification. A 10-year-old can recognize them. If a professional is looking for a certain kind of evidence, he or she would know that a passport isn't evidence, but they're just grabbing stuff. One more example of why we need to get rid of the senior leadership in the FBI. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. Skip, about a month from now in Lansing, Michigan, you're hosting the Second Amendment March. Tell us about that.
Well, Colonel, we do this every year. This year, September 27th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., it'll be at the Lansing State Capitol. And we do this every year, and it's just like a celebration of our Second Amendment rights. We all show up, and there's a big, huge tent. Sometimes we have hot dog vendors and stuff like that. And people show off their favorite carry gun or, you know, something like that. This year, we've got some good speakers that we've invited. We've invited Tudor Dixon, who is the, you know, Republican nominee for governor. And then we've also invited Matt DiPerno, who is running for state attorney general here in Michigan. And then Sheriff Darleaf, who, oddly enough, he's being investigated by our state attorney general, who is a Democrat. Get this, he's being investigated for investigating evidence of election fraud. So you would think that that would be okay for a sheriff to investigate inside his own county, but apparently it's not.
Well, I'll be there. It's going to be fun. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to cover the food shortage that our government and the UN are promoting. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will share some his warrant wisdom. Next, Dr. Bruce Gilley will discuss how it is that contemporary wokeness, not colonialism, that takes its clues from Nazism, this despite what the 1619 Project claims. Then we'll hear from Jared Filetti about the Lawfare Project. We'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. And we'll, of course, discuss Service Academy football with Quentin Roberts.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or Facebook. And now it's time for News and Comments by the Colonel. Of course, we'll start with the news first. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, 10 individuals on the FBI's terrorist screening database were arrested by Customs and Border Protection in July. This figure, which is in CBP's monthly operational report, grows to 66 when looking at how many people were caught at the border in fiscal year 2022 alone. This is a marked increase from 2017 to 2021 combined, in which 26 people in the database were caught. This only underscores the importance of a secure border, as these numbers only reflect the people that authorities have gotten a hold of. The fiscal year still has September left, and migrant encounters of the border already surpassed the previous year by nearly 160,000 encounters.
That's crazy. Our southern border and our nation is not secure because our federal government leaders want it unsecure. If they didn't want it unsecure, they'd secure it. Maybe the huge increase in violent crime in our nation might be related to this. And some states are trying to do the job of our federal government should be doing by blocking the border some. Good for them.
Arizona Governor Doug Ducey announced earlier this month that his state has begun building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border without support from the Biden administration. Ducey criticized the federal government for its lack of action on the country's illegal immigration crisis and said Arizona can't wait any longer. He said, "The Biden administration's lack of urgency on border security is a dereliction of duty. Arizonans can't wait any longer for the federal government to deliver on their delayed promises." The Republican governor went on to argue that the state's wall would support Border Patrol agents and local law enforcement officials in their efforts to prevent illegal immigrants from crossing the border. Quote, "It's our responsibility to protect our citizens and law enforcement from this unprecedented crisis. With the resources and manpower in the right places, our Border Patrol and law enforcement will be better equipped to do their jobs well and prevent cartels from exploiting our communities," unquote. According to state officials, construction is currently underway on an initial $6 million project outside of Yuma. The goal of this first project is to fill in gaps in the existing wall, which was constructed under former President Trump. Workers are stacking massive shipping containers in these gaps, with a special emphasis on points where border crossings are common. The containers are 9 feet by 40 feet wide, 22 feet high, and weigh around 8,800 pounds. 60 of these 4-ton shipping containers were brought to the border to complete the first project outside Yuma.
And you know something? Several of them have been knocked over, and the people are saying, oh, it must be the wind. The wind?
Right, Colonel. Right, yeah.
A 4-ton shipping container? No, and there's all kinds of marks where machines be used against them. This is a real crisis, especially for the states on our southern border. Thousands and thousands of illegal aliens constantly showing up. The media thinks the problems in New York City and D.C. are huge, but it ignores this disaster. It's nuts.
Massive explosions and fires hit a military depot in Russia-annexed Crimea earlier this month, forcing the evacuation of over 3,000 people, the second time in recent days that the Ukraine war's focus has turned to the contested peninsula. Russia blamed the blast at an ammunition storage facility on an act of sabotage without naming the perpetrators. As with the previous week's explosions, they led to speculation that Ukrainian forces may have staged an attack on the peninsula, which Russia has controlled since 2014 when they grabbed it. Separately, the Russian newspaper Kommersant quoted local residents as saying that plumes of black smoke also rose over an airbase in Crimea. Ukraine has stopped short of publicly claiming responsibility for any of the fires or explosions, including last week's at another airbase that destroyed 9 Russian planes. If Ukrainian forces were in fact responsible for any of the explosions, they would represent a significant escalation in the war.
3 cheers for Ukraine. Russia's having real trouble finding soldiers to fight the war, but the people of Ukraine won't stop fighting. I love it.
And the United Nations disciplined and removed a top official from her post after she publicly admonished Palestinian terror groups for a spate of rocket attacks on Israeli citizens. Sarah Muscroft, who served as the head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, was forced to apologize after an August 8 tweet in which she condemned the Palestinian Islamic Jihad terror organization for its indiscriminate rocket fire into Israel. Following pushback from pro-Palestinian activists who accused her of being overly deferential to Israel, Muscroft called her original missive ill-informed and then deleted her Twitter account altogether. A UN official confirmed that Muscroft was removed from her post as a result of the tweets and will be reassigned elsewhere in the agency. Israeli officials and UN watchdog groups say the situation is proof of the international organization's systemic bias against Israel, revealing how the UN silences critics of Palestinian terrorism. While UN officials routinely criticize Israel and characterize it as an apartheid state, they have done little to hold the Palestinians accountable for deadly terror attacks.
Despite it being strongly anti-US, we provide the UN with about 25% of its total income, so they can do things like support Palestinian terrorism against Israel. We need to stop supporting the UN. We really do.
The PACT Act recently became law and is perhaps the largest healthcare and benefit expansion in VA history. PACT stands for Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics. It brings these changes. It expands and extends eligibility for VA healthcare for veterans with toxic exposures and veterans of the Vietnam, Gulf War, and post-9/11 eras. It adds more than 20 new presumptive conditions for burn pits and other toxic exposures. It adds more presumptive exposure locations for Agent Orange and radiation. It requires the VA to provide a toxic exposure screening to every veteran enrolled in VA healthcare. It helps us improve research, staff education, and treatment related to toxic exposures. So, if you're a veteran or survivor, you can file claims now to apply for PACT Act-related benefits.
I'm glad this bill is law. It's been long overdue. I just hope it's not taken advantage of. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do, and I encourage everyone to do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Dr. Bruce Gilley about being woke. At ease, troops, take a break.
This is Lieutenant Colonel Retired John Barry, managing partner of Barry Law. For over 50 years, Barry Law has defended the rights of Americans, both on the battlefield and in the courtroom. We are committed to supporting our fellow service members. If you need help appealing your VA disability decision, find us at PTSDlawyers.com or call 888-883-2483.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
Day 3 Creation is a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products. Our Get Relief, Give Relief program sees that 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing service dogs at no cost to disabled veterans to help restore their physical and emotional independence. Giving is an expression of our thankfulness and praise to God as we recognize that everything we have belongs to the Lord. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Frontlines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, for our nation to be able to both survive and protect ourselves and our allies, we need to feed and defend ourselves. This requires, among other things, energy independence, which our nation did have until about 20 months ago, and food independence, which we haven't had in some time. We've discussed it on this show. We need to support and encourage our farmers so that we can count on being able to feed ourselves. Yet the UN and our national leadership is moving away from supporting our farmers. The UN website shows that the goal of their sustainability agenda, known as Habitat One, is that land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals, and that private land ownership is a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, therefore contributes to social injustice. The UN has declared that, quote, public control of land use is therefore indispensable. Are you surprised that some of the world's wealthiest and most powerful corporate leaders are working with communists in China and elsewhere in an effort to centralize control over food production and crush independent farmers and ranchers? Today, due to rapidly increasing food prices and shortage of supplies, humanity is facing the worst hunger crisis the world has seen in decades, and a recession appears to be around the corner. Why then are farmers being prevented from farming? Without farmers, the world would collapse. Farming is arguably the world's most important profession, and it's under attack. In June, hundreds of furious Dutch farmers gathered to protest the government's nitrogen reduction targets. The Netherlands has thousands of dairy farmers and over 1.5 million dairy cows and calves. Moreover, the Netherlands is the EU's largest exporter of meat. The reduction of emissions actually means reducing the number of pigs, chickens, and cows by about 30%. It appears that we're witnessing a deliberate shrinking of the farming sector. That's difficult to disagree, since it's a stated UN goal. After the U.S., the Netherlands is the world's leading agricultural producer, exporting vegetables, meat, and dairy products to millions of people. And the livelihood of thousands of Dutch farmers hangs in the balance. But try to tell that to the Dutch government. Hey, while you're at it, tell it to ours. In the U.S., farmers, we've been told, are the backbone of America. However, the current administration clearly thinks otherwise. Last year, the administration added agricultural land to the Conservation Reserve Program. Under this very controversial program, farmers are now encouraged to leave land fallow. Really, this program is a part of a broader government-wide push to halve greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. Interestingly, the Biden administration's goal is very similar to the Dutch government's goal. In California, home of 124,000 farmers, people are being paid not to grow crops. An odd move considering the Golden State is responsible for a quarter of our nation's crops. This year, because of this crazy program, 35,000 acres of rice fields will remain unused. Across the pond, in the UK, the government is committed to helping farmers leave the industry. In a rather interesting statement, the British government assures farmers wishing to leave the industry they will be rewarded with a one-time lump sum payment and will then surrender their entitlements and be expected to either rent or sell their land or surrender their tenancy in order to create real opportunities for new farmers. I'll get to this in a minute. Britain currently exports thousands of tons of lamb, beef, and chicken every year. Now the real question, as the government tears down the traditional agricultural sector, what will they replace it with? This brings us back to the phrase new farmers. Traditional farming is being replaced by organic farming, a defining feature of the Green Revolution. Now, organic farming may sound fantastic, but research shows that at a macro level, quote, its farms produce far less food per unit of land and water than conventional ones, end quote. Organic farming yields typically, quote, 20 to 50% less than conventional agriculture, end quote. Oh, and as an extensive meta-analysis highlighted, when compared with conventional farming methods, quote, ammonia emissions, nitrogen leaching, and nitrous oxide emissions per product unit were higher from organic systems, unquote. The fact of the matter is this. The current world population stands at about 7.6 billion. By 2050, it will rise to 9.8 billion, according to a recent UN report. If traditional farming is being relegated to the trash bin and organic farming is simply unsustainable, how are we to feed the people of tomorrow when we're struggling to feed the people of today? Folks, this is an attack on us, our nation, our military, and we must fight back. We must stand with the American farmers and against our government, the UN, and other groups seeking to control us by controlling our food. Get active now. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Well, Colonel, mankind's new best friend is coming to the U.S. Space Force. The Space Force has conducted a demonstration using dog-like four-legged unmanned ground vehicles, or what they call UGVs, for security patrols and other repetitive tasks. The demonstration used at least two Vision 60 UGVs, or robot dogs is what they call them, built by Ghost Robotics, and that took place at Cape Canaveral Space Force Station on July 27th and 28th. According to a statement from the Department of Defense, Space Launch Delta 45, which is responsible for all of the space launch operations at Kennedy Space Center Cape Canaveral, will use the robot dogs for damage assessments and patrol to save significant man hours. Images from the demonstration show personnel operating the robots with a hand controller inside a hangar. The Ghost Robotics Vision 60 UGVs can be equipped with a wide variety of optical and acoustic sensors, enabling them to serve as automated eyes and ears around sensitive installations, such as a Space Force base. The robots can be operated either autonomously or by a human controller, and can even respond to voice commands. The dog-like robots can also serve as miniaturized communication nodes, carrying antennas to quickly extend networks beyond existing infrastructure or in locations where no such infrastructure exists whatsoever. The robots have been previously tested by the U.S. Air Force for perimeter defense tasks as part of a large test of the service's Advanced Battle Management System data sharing network. In that 2020 test, the robot dogs at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada provided real-time strike targeting data to U.S. Air Force operators in Florida by using Starlink satellite links. The Ghost Robotics UGVs are designed to withstand water and weather, and they were even recently demonstrated with a taillight payload, enabling them to travel underwater. And aside from the military applications, the robot dogs are also being eyed for uses in emergency management, public safety, and industrial inspections. Now, you kind of see a picture of what these things look like, because they kind of, well, look dumb. These things look like a child's robotic toy and certainly not a military tool. However, robotics, autonomous, and unmanned, I think are becoming the new keywords for the military. In fact, I'm betting we're developing the last manned fighter jet right now. There are even companies working with the military today to transform current aircraft to autonomous flyers and eventually completely unmanned. The cost savings in taking current aircraft and making them autonomous is huge. But more than that, it could speed up this whole entire unmanned autonomous race. You know, we've proven the effectiveness of drones over the past 20 years, so the logical next step is going autonomous. But it does have me concerned about what combat will actually look like over the next decade. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. That's cool. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the difference between colonialism and racism with Dr. Bruce Gilley. Then we'll learn about the Lawfare Project. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's pull-up time. Start with 40, take a break, do another 30, then stand at ease. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Dr. Bruce Gilley. Dr. Gilley is a professor of political science and public policy at Portland State University. His book, In Defense of German Colonialism, dethrones the revisionist historians, showing how European colonialism was actually a force for good and how colonialism's fall allowed the Nazis to rise, and how Nazism created the conditions from which modern wokeness would spring. So our nation was born of and has promoted freedom for all, despite the woke untruths on this topic. I'm glad to have somebody who knows this stuff cold. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thanks, Colonel Gillum. It's great to be back talking to you again.
Bruce, I too have been a political science professor at the college level, but not as a doctorate. So I understand how you couldn't avoid dealing with this topic. If you really care about political science in our country, you can't not think about this stuff. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the longer you spend in talking about any contemporary issue, I think whether it's military strategy or politics or economics, you just get more and more interested in history and the kind of where did this come from topic. And that's really what I've been doing with looking at colonialism for the last sort of 5 years of my career.
Well, and even if you weren't planning to look at it, the woke people are stuffing it in your face. So therefore, you really can't avoid it. So let's get to the point. It's contemporary wokeism, not our colonial background, that has its roots in Nazism, right?
That's right. So I'm really just turning the tables completely on what I think are the sort of silly theories that the wokes and the critical race theorists claim, which is that the West is evil and the symbol of Western evil is colonialism. And it was oppressive and illiberal, and they are going to free us and create a classically liberal and free society with their wokery and critical race theory. And what I'm showing is precisely the opposite, that you know, the Western tradition is the foundations of free societies. It's the foundations of constitutionalism and the rule of law. Colonialism was an outgrowth of that. Indeed, it was premised on the whole idea that, hey, freedom is for everyone. It's not just for the white man. It was the greatest anti-racist program in world history. going around the world saying, hey, here's how you set up a government. This is what a market economy is. The Germans were no different. They had a very successful colonial episode in the late 19th, early 20th century. And the termination of colonialism in the German case was really a kind of a, almost like a dry run for what happens when you tear down Western civilization that we're seeing in our contemporary society today. And the effects in Germany are well known. And I'm just trying to say, hey, there's a clear parallel between attacking the foundations of a free society and the wokery and illiberal totalitarian doctrines that will quickly rush into that space.
Yeah. If you look, basically everybody, all the nations in Europe were to some degree colonial, and that can be separated from what other nations did, perhaps Japan, where they weren't colonializing, they were dominating and impressing their will on other people. There's a big difference, isn't there?
Yeah, and ultimately the big difference, Dennis, is who's doing the colonizing, who's doing the empire building. I mean, empires and colonies are a human universal. They have existed since time immemorial. Indeed, that's the normal state of affairs for a human organization is empire. I mean, the whole idea of a nation, a sovereign nation state is kind of unusual and modern. But the big difference with the Europeans was they were a different kind of colonizer. They were a different kind of imperial power. The difference for them was they were at the time and continue to be the most civilized. And I'm happy to use that word without quotes around it, the most civilized, the most modern, the most free, the most liberal in the classical sense countries. And so when they did colonizing, it was a different kind of relationship, a different kind of mechanism set in place in those host countries. They became themselves more modern, more civilized, more law-abiding. Minorities had their rights protected. Market economies started to thrive. So it's all about who's doing the colonizing. And because the Europeans were doing the colonizing, they were bringing tremendous benefits to all the places where they left their mark.
Well, you can sure look at how the British treated us and Canada and Australia and other places. We had colonial government. Yes, the British were on top. We basically could run and do pretty much what we wanted to do as long as we played by their rules.
Right. What was the American Revolution, if not an assertion of the rights of Englishmen, which was a whole idea that came from being an English colony? I mean, if you had been a Spanish colony, probably those notions that founded the formation of this nation would not have been so deeply embedded. But I mean, that was the whole deal with British imperialism in particular, is this is a country that has a very strong tradition going back to Magna Carta of the rights of the Englishman and the rights of the British subjects, and those ideas spread with its empire. And invariably, those ideas led to demands for self-government, which the British were totally familiar with because that had been going on in their Caribbean colonies since the 17th century. So, you know, this was the story. And this is why great English thinkers like Edmund Burke, the founder of modern conservatism, was a strong defender both of British colonialism and of the American Revolution.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the disaster in our nation caused by wokeness and critical race theory with Dr. Bruce Gilley. Critical race theory is being taught, as near as I can tell, in well over half of our schools from kindergarten through college. And it's not true. And it's hurting us. I mean, who'd want to defend a nation? This is Military Talk Radio that was evil, had evil roots and evil intents today.
Yeah. And so we have to kind of just remind ourselves what we're talking about, because what you hear on the left these days, the conservatives are all talking about this bogeyman of critical race theory and it doesn't exist. Well, it does exist. And here's how it exists. Critical race theory has a couple of very simple premises. One is we need to think of society as composed not of individuals who are fundamentally responsible for how their lives go, but of racial categories. That's the first move. So that's just a fact of critical race theory. There's no denying that is the central premise of the whole theory. And that's problematic for a free society because it's essentially ascriptive. It's ascribing characteristics to people without knowing anything about them, how they ended up where they are, what their life choices have been, good or bad. The second thing it does, and related to that, it says, well, we need a racial hierarchy. We need a hierarchy of oppression or victimization. So the more oppressed and victimized you are, the higher you are on the racial category. Think of the parallels here to Nazism, right? I mean, they also had a sort of a hierarchy of races, very similar. And then the third move is And now we need government to come in and organize society according to this degree of victimization or oppression, and will dole out housing and income and jobs and access to resources based on your degree of victimization. And that's the totalitarian move, right? That is the takeover of a free society. Those are the three fundamental premises of critical race theory. They have very clear parallels in the Nazi experiment in Germany. And what I'm just trying to say is, you know, the Nazi experiment grew out of what? It grew out of an attack on the West. The Nazis were horrific critics of the West. They thought of themselves as freeing Germany from Western civilization and all that nonsense about a free society. Well, guess what? That's a lot what you hear from critical race theory today.
You know, that's a really good point. And what really behind this is the government decides who the anointed ones are and who the non-anointed ones are. And that power, it could be race now, but allow this to control our government. It could be something else. It could be almost anything the government wanted to come up with once they have the right to do that.
Well, that's right. So it used to be when the Stalinists were the main threat to a free society in America and elsewhere, it was class, right? So it was you were a peasant worker or petty bourgeoisie, or you were a kulak and a landowner or a big capitalist. And those were the categories. Then the left kind of got more interested in race. So now they have racial categories. But you're right. In the future, think about all the categories, the way you could divide society. How about by your degree of carbon footprint or your climate violence, right? So we could have the climate virtue people on top and the climate violence people on the bottom. We could have the degree to which you're a threat to public health. So you're a compliant, vaccinated, mask wearing stay-at-homer, and then you have extra benefits, or you're a non-compliant, anti-vaccinated person. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can suddenly decide society needs to be A, categorized, B, lined up in terms of degree of virtue, and then C, subject to differential treatment by the government based on your hierarchy status.
And that's scary as heck. And we're moving that way. There's more to discuss about getting what I call unwoke. And Dr. Gilley's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Lenny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, most days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Dr. Gilley and I will be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Bruce Gilley on the damage of wokeness and race theory and that stuff, and the terribly incorrect theories like the 1619 Project are doing to our nation. Bruce, we've talked a bit about critical race theory. The 1619 Project, it's all really the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, this is really about rewriting history according to contemporary ideas. And in this case of 1619, of course, we're basically taking the history of our nation and the exciting and innovative, the good, the bad, everything. And we're recasting it completely in terms of this relatively insignificant, in my view, aspect of our national history, which was, you know, the 400,000 slaves who were redirected from the transatlantic slave trade going to South America that ended up in the Southern United States, which looms large in American history because of the sort of the importance of the elimination of slavery in our national history. But, you know, fundamentally, this is something that has no purchase on our contemporary society. There is the legacies of slavery are mainly the legacies that live on in history books. That's the main legacy of slavery. And again, it's just a part of, you know, do you believe in a free society that whose accomplishments are largely explained by the choices of individuals? Or do you think that history is this great structural system in which people are just pawns? And 1619 is just another example of that sort of, you know, I would call it kind of structural approach to history, that the individual and the role of the individual gets reduced to nothing, essentially. And we decide that there's these kind of moving categories that explain everything, in this case, slavery.
And this is, we get away from ability. I've read that in many medical schools, the race and that sort of thing are criteria being used to accept people in and that sort of thing. This is infiltrating our nation at all kinds of levels. And frankly, I don't care how politically correct someone is. If I need surgery on my eye, I want the best eye surgeon. The rest of this other stuff is not important, but it seems to be integrating everywhere.
Yeah. So the reason I'm talking about this again is I just published a book called In Defense of German Colonialism, which might seem kind of an obscure topic because German colonialism was kind of limited. Of course, the bigger resonance of that episode, late 19th, early 20th century episode, where the Germans kind of were doing the successful thing of creating liberal societies around the world, terminated at the Treaty of Versailles. And then the question is, and this was kind of the end of German liberalism, 1919, as we know, you know, what happened in that country after they were essentially kicked out of Western civilization. So you sort of follow the logic of what happens when you start tearing down the statues of your founders. What happens when you start saying that, you know, freedoms and free society is not for us? You know, we need sort of state management. Well, don't assume that it's going to be leftist utopia that rushes into that space. I mean, this is the sort of warning to the critical race theorists and the 1619 people. You know, don't assume that if you tear down a free society, you're going to be the one left in charge. It may well be a movement from the right that is just as illiberal and totalitarian, but is bringing a different set of doctrines to bear, and you may not be the group on top. So, you know, tear down a free society at your peril. And the German case is just a prime example of what happens. Don't forget also that, you know, the communists could well have come to power in Germany in the 30s. I mean, it was a two-horse race between the two movements. But the point is, neither of them had any intention of reclaiming Germany's great classical liberal heritage, and the consequences are well known.
Yes, indeed. We got to fight some wars and do a lot of things because of that. And this isn't complicated, is it? This is just plain looking at history and seeing what actually happened and trying to look at it from a neutral perspective to look at the facts as opposed to painting it some different way so that it meets an expectation.
Right. It's simply just trying to save societies, protect societies from what I would call sometimes intellectuals. I mean, I do think that there's a tendency among intellectuals who create theories, and then theories become doctrines and ideologies, and they get taken up by parties and stuff to just have all kinds of plans for society, all kinds of ways to plan them and control them and regulate them and steer them and direct them and alternately reward and punish other members. I mean, there's some problem with the intellectual mind that creates these doctrines of control, regulate, punish. And much of this is then the story of how a free society, especially in the Western liberal tradition, has just kind of repeatedly had to sort of push those lions back and just keep that free space available. And that's the story of Western success is, you know, it's not so much that Western people have some innate brilliance. It's just that we figured out that the way to create a successful society is to keep the state apparatus at a distance and limited in its functions.
And certainly our Constitution was written that way, but we seem to have gotten away from that. Our country was founded on the right principles. Yes, we're imperfect. We've always been imperfect. The only person who was perfect was crucified. He's not on earth anymore. So we can't expect perfect from anybody, but it's about as good as it gets, except we're trying to move away from that. And in the midst of all that, there's always the people that want to grab power. That's a pretty simple way to look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I just, it's not that hard. Like you say, this is not difficult. If you want to get a quick measure of the balance of power between government and people in the United States, just look at the proportion of our national income that the government is spending every year. And it has gone up and up and up and up. And I remember back, you know, I don't remember, but I read the literature from the 60s, and it was just getting to be around 30%, and there was kind of alarm. You know, how could 30% of GDP? Well, we're now about to reach 50%. In other words, half of our national income is captured by and reallocated by government. So, you know, we're at a point where France was in the 50s and 60s, and that was back when people were calling France a socialist country. So, you know, it's not hard to measure this and see it and to recognize the danger that represents to the society that we've built.
Indeed. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with about getting unwoke or back to our values with Dr. Bruce Gilley. Bruce, it's pretty clear that these lies must play a lot of roles in our military's difficulty in getting recruits. As we mentioned earlier, who'd want to die for a horrible country? Yet, this is a horrible country, go live somewhere else. But rather than play those games, we need to think about who we really are. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that, you know, the role of a country's military in the classic Western liberal tradition, you can go back and read, for me, it's The Soldier and the State. That was Samuel Huntington's, for me, his great book. He's the great Harvard political scientist who went on to write The Clash of Civilizations. But his best book, in my mind, is The Soldier and the State. And he goes through a very clear understanding of what is the role of the soldier in a modern liberal Western society. And he makes it very clear that, you know, that on the one hand, the society itself is a free society with all kinds of doctrines circulating, and that's fine. That's what a free society should be. But he makes it very clear that, you know, that the military has a very distinct role, which is to protect that society, and therefore it has to have a very distinct ethos, which is not just a fundamental commitment to the Constitution. But it also needs to be disciplined. It needs to be hierarchical. It needs to be based on meritocracy. It needs to have a very clear sense of mission and autonomy and specialized functions. And so it's a great book. It's about the sort of the difficulties that liberal societies will have as they become more successful and more liberal. And I mean that in a classical liberal sense, in maintaining the integrity of their armies. And Huntington, you know, didn't see an easy answer to that question.
Yes, sir. And speaking of really good books, talk to us a little bit about yours and how listeners can buy a copy.
So In Defense of German Colonialism is my second book with Regnery Gateway. You can get it on the Regnery website. My other one was called Last Imperialist, which is a story of a British colonial official. So they've taken me up on this interest in colonialism, a kind of revisionist approach to colonialism, making the case for colonialism. Of course, making the case for British colonialism was easy. Most people don't think there is a case for German colonialism. They're not even sure what German colonialism was. So I'm in part shining a light on a little known episode in European history. The Germans didn't have many colonies. Of course, Germany itself was only created in 1871. So talking about four colonies in Africa, some large areas sprawling across the Pacific, and of course, Qingdao, the port city in northern China that might have been a Hong Kong of the North if the Germans had kept it after World War I. And I'm just tracing basically the success of those colonies. And then in particular, sort of the modern relevance is how terrible it was for German internal politics when at the Treaty of Versailles, as part of that sort of very strict regimen that was imposed on Germany, that of course included disarmament and included reparations, that also included a loss of their colonies and being kind of kicked out of Western civilization, as I try and trace in the book, was one of the big contributing factors to the rise of the Nazis.
Indeed. Bruce, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for offering truth to our nation's students and citizens. We all need to know our history and know it better. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Dennis.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Gerald Ferretti about the Lawfare Project. Troops, I'm not fond of pain, and I absolutely won't use addicting products. That's why I can recommend Day 3 Creation products if you're in pain. Use the code FREEDOM when you order at day3creation.com. Save 20%. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones. Grab some protein. Rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.